I want to invite you, if you have a Bible, to turn to Matthew chapter 26. You'll be happy to know, if you were here last week, I told you we had moved, and I somehow had packed my Bible in the middle of all that and couldn't find it. I had people who do not go to this church, who listen online, who were like messaging me and sending me, like, adding me on Twitter, asking, like, did you ever find your Bible? Like, people were very concerned. So thank you. Thanks to everyone for your concern. I did find it. It was packed with all of my grilling stuff. So why not? Like, because, you know, when you're packing up your house at the very last minute, it's like, yeah, grilling stuff, Bible, all the kids' medicine that can all just go in the same, like, giant tub of nonsense. So that's where I found it. I have, though, not yet found my razor. So if you're sitting there going, like, why do you look like that? Is that how you're going to look now? Then no. I know that if I go buy a new razor, I'll find the old razor. So, like, it's a battle of wills against me and all the boxes. So hopefully I won't look like this for much longer. Anyway, that's all that's... Now you're caught up on, like, where we are in the unpacking phase. So... all right. Well, we're in the middle of a series that we've been doing on the life of Simon Peter. And if you've been here so far, you know that kind of what we're focusing on with the series is we're looking at some of the stories about Simon Peter. Some of them are known. Some of them are less well known. And one of the things that we're sort of seeing is Peter has these ideas about who Jesus is. Because if you're fully unaware, Simon Peter is one of the original disciples, one of the original followers of Jesus. And so one of the things that we're finding is that Peter, in a lot of ways, has some very deeply held misconceptions about what Jesus is trying to do in the world. And over and over and over again, in fact, a pattern that we've seen at this point, now that we're like 6 weeks into this, a very consistent pattern that we've seen is that Peter has this idea about what Jesus is trying to do, and his idea is centered around, like, bravado and strength, and, like, in a lot of ways, like, violence. And each of these situations, Jesus kind of has to redirect Peter and say, that's actually not what we're doing here. And we talked a few weeks ago about how in this part of the world, at this time, the Roman Empire had come in and they had occupied and conquered the region of Judea. And there was a commonly held belief among people who lived there that at some point, someone from within the community, from within the people, would rise up and lead a violent revolt, a blessed by God violent revolt, to overthrow the Roman Empire, to kill everyone who represents the Roman Empire, and anybody who doesn't get killed will be sent running for the hills, and then the people of Israel will have their country back. That's the general consensus, that is a common thing that a lot of people at this time believe. And the person, and they believe that the person who would eventually rise up, they would refer to that person as a Messiah or Christ. And so when Jesus is referred to as Messiah or Christ in a pre-crucifixion context, a lot of times the people who are referring to him with those words have that notion in mind that Jesus is here to violently overthrow our oppressors. And one of the things that we've seen with Peter is this clearly is what he thinks, because he continues to over and over kind of double down on, oh, we're gonna overthrow our enemies, aren't we? We're going to violently, like, kill and throw out everybody who isn't with us, who isn't one of us, who isn't pure. And so that's a general notion that Peter very clearly has. And over and over again, Jesus continues to tell him that's not what this is. Like all the way up to last week. Last week we looked at a story where Jesus is about to be arrested, and Peter, like, there's an angry mob coming for them, and Peter, like, pulls out his sword and he starts swinging it and, like cuts off a guy's ear. And so Peter clearly believes that violence is definitely a part of this whole movement. And Jesus continues to tell him, no, that's not what we're doing here. But Peter continues to naturally be bent towards strength and force. So what we're going to do today is we're going to look at a story that is a very famous story about Peter. But before that, we're going to look at another story that kind of sets up this story. And the thing is, this, like, the two stories happen on opposite sides of the ear slicing event. So so just to kind of give you a sense in time of where we are. So this is the night that Jesus is about to be arrested. So in Matthew chapter 26, beginning in verse 31, it says, then Jesus told them, this very night you will all fall away on account of me. For it is written, I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. And he's quoting from a Jewish prophet named Zechariah here. And it says, but after I have risen, I will go ahead of you into Galilee. Peter replied, even if all fall away on account of you, I never will. Which is interesting because, well, I mean, actually, it's not unusual that Peter would, like, express this level of bravado. This is kind of his thing. But right here, one of the things that we talked about is one of the things that Matthew does is Matthew will often use Peter as a stand-in for the rest of the disciples. But here, Peter very specifically differentiates himself from the rest of the disciples. He kind of steps forward and he says, all these guys may be weak, but I'm not. I'm not going anywhere. I will be the last man standing with you, is Peter's kind of pledge to Jesus. And so then in verse 34, it says, Jesus replies, it says, truly I tell you, this very night, before the rooster crows, you will disown me three times. But Peter declared, even if I have to die with you, I will never disown you. And all the other disciples said the same. So I think we all know where the story is going. Because if you're unfamiliar with this story, it's because you didn't go to youth camp with me ever. Because we'll talk about that in a second. But so the next thing that happens, actually, the next thing that happens is they go and there's like this moment where Jesus is in prayer and Peter is one of the disciples who falls asleep a bunch. And then the next thing that happens right after that is the famous ear slicing incident, which we saw last week. So the angry mob comes for Jesus. And I would argue right here, this is what Peter thinks Jesus is talking about when he talks about all of you will fall away. He sees the angry mob and Peter sees his opportunity to like step in and actually like make a move. So that's when he draws his sword and slices off the guy's ear. And Jesus says, put away your sword. And so Jesus allows himself to be arrested. So then right after that is where we come into this story. So in Matthew chapter 26, verse 69, it says, now Peter was sitting out in the courtyard and a servant girl came to him. You also were with Jesus of Galilee, she said, but he denied it before them all. I don't know what you're talking about, he said. Then he went out to the gateway where another servant girl saw him and said to the people there, this fellow was with Jesus of Nazareth. He denied it again with an oath. I don't know the man. After a little while, those standing there went up to Peter and said, surely you are one of them. Your accent gives you away. Then he began to call down curses and he swore to them, I don't know the man. Immediately, a rooster crowed. Then Peter remembered the words of Jesus, the words Jesus had spoken. Before the rooster crows, you will disown me three times. And he went outside and wept bitterly. So it's a pretty down story. So what is going on here? Because this does not seem consistent with who Peter has been up to this point, right? Because all the way from like pretty much the first thing that we see him doing, which is like getting out of a boat and like sinking into the water because he has so much confidence in himself, and like all the way up to like the slicing off of a guy's ear, Peter has been like full on like bravado, posturing, like I am the strongest, I am the toughest. Even his response, when Jesus says, all of you will fall away instead of me, for Peter, his response to that reveals that in his mind, weakness is the greatest of flaws. Like he has no space, he has no time for anybody who's like a coward. And so this scene where he denies even knowing Jesus after Jesus has been arrested feels very out of place. And if you, okay, I've heard this passage preached about dozens of times and it's always the same. And it has, specifically, it was always on the last night of youth camp because I grew up going to youth camp as a teenager. And then I also was a youth pastor who took groups of kids to youth camp for years and years. Every year, almost every year, the night that youth camp is supposed to end, and you got to sort of put yourself like mentally and emotionally in the place of all the people who are there because you have a bunch of teenagers who are totally sleep deprived. And the person that they fell in love with on Monday no longer likes them anymore. And their volleyball team lost the intramural volleyball tournament and they're really down about that as well. And they've been pumping in this really emotionally manipulative music for a while. And they're kind of like pretty wide open and raw and ready for like any sort of emotional thing you're gonna throw at them. And so then you get a guy, like the same preacher who's been like talking the whole week about like all these, like whatever it is that the sermons have been about. And like the very last night of camp, He will get up, inevitably, and tell this group of people, that he'll read the story, and he'll tell this whole group of people, like, you know, when you go back to school, you're gonna be tempted to not talk about Jesus. And so you don't wanna be like Peter, because Peter's a coward. Like, this was always talked about, like, this is Peter's worst moment. Not when he cuts off the guy's ear, not when Jesus calls him Satan. This right here, this is his worst moment in the minds of the people who I've heard preach about this. And it was always sort of like, Peter is weak. And he's a coward, and so you don't want to be that coward. So here's what I want all of you to do. I want everyone to wear their camp shirt to school on the first day. And anytime somebody says, why are you wearing that shirt? You say, because, and you give them like a Jesus speech. You know what I mean? And so it becomes about vibrato. Vibrato is a singing thing. That's like what Eddie Vedder does when he's singing Better Man. That's not this. I did that in the last service too. Bravado is the word I'm looking for. It's sort of, say what?
I was waiting for the musical reference.
If it's not a musical reference, I didn't really preach. So Anyway, that was actually not even, okay, that happened two services in a row. I got to figure that out. But it is sort of this posturing of, like, weakness is the worst thing you can be accused of. But isn't it, like, to me, looking back on that now and hearing, like, the camp preacher in my mind saying that, isn't he basically doing the same thing that Peter's doing right before he, like, does all this other stuff? Isn't he, aren't we pretty much just repeating the cycle of, like, false posturing and then, and, like, setting ourselves up to maybe, like, be embarrassed a little bit? And so the thing about that is maybe that's not really the most helpful way of talking about this story. And again, it always sort of centers around, like, this is the worst thing you can be. And this is Peter's worst moment, because he denies Jesus. He pretends like he doesn't know him because he doesn't want to be arrested. He's afraid. I'm going to make an argument here that I don't think Peter's afraid of that. I don't think the fear that we've always associated with this is what it really is. And here's why. Because literally right before this, and by the way, Matthew is really intentional with how he tells these stories and how he strings them together. Literally right before this, Peter is ready to, like, die in a bloody confrontation, like, as Jesus is being arrested. He's not afraid of death. He's clearly not afraid of death. He's not afraid of like, violence either. I would argue that what's happened here is not Peter's afraid of being arrested. I would argue that what's happened here is Peter's entire worldview has collapsed, and he doesn't know what he believes anymore. Because again, over and over and over again, he has postured himself as, we will be the strong ones. And over and over and over again, Jesus continues to tell him, that's not the kind of story we're a part of. And now he has just witnessed Jesus let himself be arrested, the person who he has put all of his hope in, that we are finally going to be free and we're finally going to, like, get our oppressors out of here. So now that Jesus has actually been arrested with no struggle whatsoever, I would argue that what Peter is going through here is total disillusionment. So, because he's done nothing but show strength up to this point, and now all of a sudden, the person that he thought was going to be, like, the big overthrower of all this stuff isn't that, and he's completely breaking down. I would argue Peter is going through a psychological break at this moment. I mean, certainly there's probably some element of fear, because why wouldn't there be? But what if it's way more than that? What if Peter here is tired? What if he's disillusioned? What if in this moment, Peter's denial is not really a lie at all? What if what Peter is saying here is not like I don't want to be arrested and I don't want to get in trouble? What if what Peter is saying here is, I thought I knew what Jesus was doing, but I didn't? Maybe Peter's not lying when he says, I don't know Jesus, because maybe at this moment, Peter realizes he never really did. Because this whole time, he has believed something about Jesus, regardless of the number of times Jesus has tried to tell him otherwise. He clearly never, like, buys into what Jesus is doing. And now all of a sudden he has to reckon with, oh no, like the thing, like apparently Jesus was not kidding when he said he was going to, like, sacrifice himself. And apparently Jesus wasn't kidding when he said he was, like, put away your sword. Like this was not the thing I thought I was a part of. In this moment, Peter realizes he never really knew Jesus the way that he thought he did. What if this is Peter's dark night of the soul? What if at this moment, Peter is genuinely wrestling, he's not just afraid. What if right now he's genuinely wrestling with, what if everything I ever thought was true turned out not to be true? And so a big part of Peter's journey has been rethinking what God is doing in the world and what Jesus is about. And perhaps this is the moment that it finally clicks in, at least a little bit, that I was wrong. Like I didn't know what we were trying to do. Jesus tried to tell me over and over and over again, and I wouldn't listen. And now here we are, and I don't know what's real anymore. And by the way, the most frustrating part of this whole thing, Matthew never resolves this tension. There was a version of this sermon that I was totally prepared to do that I preached before, where we would read this story and then we would jump over to the book of John, because the book of John has a scene where Jesus, after the resurrection, Jesus sits down with Peter and he kind of has, like, a restoration with him. In fact, we're going to look at that scene next week. But Matthew doesn't include that. If all you had was the book of Matthew, this is the last thing about Peter you would ever see, because Matthew never comes back to Peter. Peter never gets resolution in the book of Matthew. And by the way, there are four gospels. There are four books that tell the story of Jesus. And John is the only one that records any sort of restoration for Peter. The other three have nothing to say about it, which means, and by the way, John was written 20 years later than all the rest of them, which means if all you had was the book of Matthew, you couldn't just be like, well, John has a whole different point of view on this. This is all you had. So if all you had in the first century, if you were one of the early church members and you had been given this book, you would not know that Peter gets resolution. You would have no, there's no way that you would know that. And so you would have this sense that the last word about Peter is, and he went outside and wept bitterly. Like, what kind of weird, crazy tension is that to just leave us with? But maybe, and the reason, okay, so I decided we're not gonna look at the John story this week. We'll look at it next week. What if Matthew is inviting us to live inside the tension? What if Matthew, by not including the thing that comes later, what if that's what he's trying to show us? What if he's trying to show us that, yeah, sometimes this is hard, and sometimes we are confronted with all the things that we thought were true, but it turns out that's not the story that we were actually a part of, and we kind of have to like live in that for a little while. So what if Matthew is inviting us to sort of be a part of a story that is, yeah, sometimes there are no answers. And sometimes we are completely disabused of all the assumptions that we had about who Jesus is. So, and that's very frustrating, but that's where Matthew leaves his readers. So maybe there is something to be gained by allowing the tension to just be for a little while, at least. And because a big part of Peter's journey has been rethinking what God is doing in the world. And perhaps he is just now realizing that Jesus really was on a path of love and grace and self-sacrifice. And all the assumptions that Peter had didn't come from Jesus. They were handed to him from somebody else. And he's just now cluing into the realization that he had in his mind made Jesus into his own image. And now he's trying to figure out what that means. So I would argue that when Peter says, I don't know the man, I would argue he's not lying. I would argue he really genuinely at this moment believes he doesn't know Jesus at all. Because he is now confronted with, I had some assumptions, and my assumptions were wrong. And at every turn, Jesus tried to tell me, but I wouldn't listen. So maybe for Peter, Jesus, the first time Jesus dies isn't on the cross. Maybe for Peter, his idea of Jesus dies the minute he's arrested and doesn't put up a fight. So here's what this has to do with us. Here's how we read it. Because one of the things we're trying to do with the series is we're trying to find a way into the point of view of Peter. We're trying to look at this and say, okay, what does the world look like through Peter's eyes in this moment? Some of us have been following a version of Jesus that is nowhere to be found in the Bible. And if we admit it to ourselves, if we really, like, genuinely look at this, and we have this realization of, oh my goodness, the version of Jesus that I have been given has nothing to do with the Jesus of the Bible. It has everything to do with the culture that I was born into and the sermons that I heard growing up and all the things that were sort of handed to me over and over and over again through like flannel graph or cartoon vegetables or whatever. Nothing, no shade to the cartoon vegetables, they're great. But just the notion of like maybe all the things that I assume are true about God and Jesus and faith and reality, maybe these are things that were just kind of passed on to me. And there aren't, and really, if you were to look at the Jesus of the scriptures, you might find yourself saying, oh, I don't know that guy. Like, you know what I mean? So, like, for example, like maybe you have the notion that Jesus loves America more than everybody else. Well, the problem with that is that's nowhere to be found in the scriptures at all. And so if you are raised with that sort of like American flag on one side and a cross on the other, and all of a sudden you have this realization of, oh, that's actually not at all the Jesus that we find in the scriptures, that's a hard thing to see. And so if you have absorbed a version of Jesus, if you have spent your whole life with a version of Jesus that maybe isn't anywhere to be found in the scriptures, and all of a sudden you begin to see that in reality, it will break you. It is really, really hard to disrupt the way you've learned to see the world. I'm using the word disrupt very intentionally because that is what it feels like. I've talked before about how before we started this church, I went through my own sort of like dark night of the soul, like, and it went on for like a couple of months. And I had this sort of sense that I don't know what I believe, really. Like, I know what I've been told, and I know what I've absorbed, and I know what I've repeated. But what I don't know is, like, are all those things real, or are they just sort of like an echo of a thing that I was told once? And so one of the things that I had to do was, and I've used the metaphor before of like, it's like you have a room full of furniture and you have to drag all the furniture out and then look at the room and say like, okay, well, what goes back in here? And the furniture are like all the things that you really believe. And so that's a hard thing to do. And when you are confronted with sort of like the realization of, oh, I've been completely misguided. I have said things and I have been very dogmatic, and I have said things that have really probably left people like hurting. Like, that is a hard thing to realize about yourself. And most of us cannot go there. Most of us mentally, we have all sorts of defenses psychologically that prevent us from going to that place. The problem is Peter doesn't have those anymore because he saw in real time Jesus give himself up to be arrested. So now Peter has nothing. He no longer has the lies that he's been telling himself. He only has what he's seen and what he's experienced. And you can't unsee the things that you've seen. And so now all of a sudden, Peter's trying to live in a world that doesn't make sense to him anymore. So when he looks at what Jesus was actually doing versus what he expected Jesus to be doing, very naturally he says, I don't know that guy. And so maybe you're in that place too. And maybe you're trying to work out what Jesus really is. And you've been given a lot of versions. And if there's a part of you that says, I can't believe in a God who, maybe it's because you're not supposed to. And like, for example, if you have ever thought to yourself, I can't believe in a God who would relish the idea of millions and millions of people suffering for no reason. Well, maybe Jesus is trying to say, like, yeah, you shouldn't. Maybe that version of God needs to die. Maybe your ideas of a God who hates all the same people that you do, maybe that version of God needs to die so that something else can be resurrected in its place, because you can't have a resurrection before you have a death. And so maybe you have an image of Jesus that, like, actually, honest to goodness, just does need to die. Like, very famously, there was a mega church pastor from the Northwest who was a pretty big deal for a while, and he was sort of known for, like, extra masculine bravado type of sermons. And he would, like, I heard sermons from him. I, like, read articles and books that were written by him, and, like, could not stop himself from talking about, like, what a tough guy Jesus is. And he would talk about, like, everybody has Jesus painted as, like, some sort of, like, wimp. He said, but that's not the Jesus I know. The Jesus I know has a tattoo of a snake down his leg, and he's got a sword in one hand and a torch in the other. And I'm like, where do you see that? Like, where, like, I've spent some time here, and I'm telling you, like, I'm not finding that. And so, so his whole thing was like, and I literally one time heard him say, I could never worship a guy that I could beat up. And I'm, I know. And my response to that is like, why would you think like that? Like, I would imagine, like, Jesus' response to this being like, why is that on the table? Like, why are we, like that's how you determine your belief system? Like, who you could and couldn't take in a fight? Like, what? And so, like, there's this very, like, tough guy sort of notion that this guy sort of put out into the world that lots and lots of people absorbed. And over and over and over again, you hear that and you think, like, I can't find that Jesus anywhere. I would argue that someone who has absorbed that over and over and over again, if that person were to be confronted with a Jesus who says, put away your sword, or blessed are the meek, or love your neighbor as yourself, or love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, I would argue that someone who has spent their whole life believing in, like, a cage fighter Jesus, I would argue that somebody who has absorbed that might look at the Jesus who says all these things and say, I don't know that guy. You know? And so maybe that's where Peter is. Or maybe you've been handed a version of Jesus that is kind of more, a little more transactional, a little bit more like, well, you know, if you just have enough faith, then you won't be sick, or you'll have more money, or, like, you know, or to say about people who are suffering or who are struggling, well, you know, if they just had more faith, then they would get all the things that they want. They would be hashtag blessed. And so they would. But the problem with that is, like, yeah, but most of the people who follow Jesus in the Bible, they don't have it super easy. And so, not to mention, like, Jesus himself suffers a lot. So where do you find that? Where do you find the notion that God is out there punishing people because of their lack of faith and then rewarding other people because they just have so much faith? Like, that's not reality. And I would argue someone who has absorbed that might look at the Jesus of the scriptures and say, I don't know that guy. Or not long ago, right here, like, not too far from where we sit right now, there was a seminary president who gave a sermon in which he talked about how a woman came into his office and told her that her husband had been, like, extremely violent towards her. And rather than give her counsel about, like, you need to get you and the kids out of the house, rather than give her some sort of, like, safety measures, a person she could call, a shelter perhaps, what he said was, you need to go home and pray for him. And then when he saw her 2 weeks later, both of her eyes were black. And he said that made him very happy because she had been faithful and had gone back and had followed his advice. I don't find that Jesus anywhere in the scriptures. I do not find a Jesus who celebrates someone who continues to violently abuse people in their own home. I don't see it. And so I wonder if we've absorbed these ideas about who Jesus is, and I wonder if some of those ideas need to die. And I think that's where Peter is. I think Peter is really kind of struggling with, what have I always thought God was? And as it turns out, now that I've seen the things that I've seen, is it possible that I was following a map that wasn't really going anywhere? So, in fact, look at Genesis chapter 32. This is a very old tradition, by the way. In Genesis chapter 32, we're gonna look at this a little bit more next week too, but I do wanna just kind of look at this. So what you have here, you have a story about a guy named Jacob. Jacob is, he's made some pretty terrible choices. He has stolen from his brother. He has lied to his father. And gotten some inheritance that maybe didn't belong to him. And so now he's, later on in life, he's has to go back and he has to face his brother who he stole from. And he's terrified. He's afraid of what's gonna happen next. And so right here in Genesis 32, he's kind of alone with his thoughts and something super weird happens. And in verse 24, it says, "So Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him till daybreak. When the man saw he could not overpower him, he touched the socket of Jacob's hip, so that his hip was wrenched, and he wrestled with the man. Then the man said, 'Let me go, for it is daybreak.' But Jacob replied, 'I will not let you go unless you bless me.' The man asked, 'What is your name?' Jacob answered, 'Jacob,' he answered. Then the man said, 'Your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you have struggled with God and with humans and have overcome.' Jacob said, 'Please tell me your name.' But he replied, 'Why do you ask my name?' Then he blessed him there. So Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, 'It is because I saw God face to face, and yet my life was spared.' The sun rose above him as he passed Peniel, and he was limping because of his hip." And by the way, he gives the name he's given here is the name Israel. If you have a footnote, if you're looking at a Bible, it has a footnote, and the footnote tells you that the word Israel literally means he struggles with God. This will become the name of the entire group of people that the rest of the Bible is about. The name of the people does not mean God is strong. The name of the people does not mean God is faithful. The name of the people means he struggles with God. The very name of the people is about how we interact and how we struggle with the divine. So we have this story about this guy who is confronted with all the things he's done and all the things, how he sees himself and how he sees the world. And in the story, he wrestles with God, and he's given a blessing, and he's given this new name that is sort of meant to indicate the blessing, but he also is given a limp. Because when you wrestle and when you have to be confronted with all the things that maybe were or weren't true about the world that you live in, sometimes you have to limp away from that. It does not leave you the same. It may leave you blessed, but it also may leave you limping. So the dark night of the soul changes us. And one of the things I think this invites us into is our ability to really genuinely wrestle with God and to really wrestle with what we believe about reality. And so with Peter, I think what we find is he's kind of going through a similar thing. He's going through I thought things were one way. I had this very fully realized view of what Jesus was, and it turns out no matter how hard Jesus tried to tell me otherwise, I wouldn't listen. And so now I'm really confronted with all the things that I once believed. That is a scary, lonely moment. And so what we find throughout the scriptures is that moment is good. It can leave you feeling blessed or renewed in some sort of way, but it can also leave you limping. And so perhaps the thing that we're invited to do is give yourself permission to wrestle with your notions of God and your notions of yourself. Take a look at Philippians chapter 2. This writer, Paul, writes this. In Philippians 2, verse 12, he says, "Therefore, my dear friends, as you have always obeyed, not only in my presence, but now much more in my absence, continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling. For it is God who works in you to will and to act in order to fulfill his good purposes." So he says, work out your salvation with fear and trembling. What does that even mean? What could that possibly even mean? Because I was always, as a kid, I was always told like salvation is a thing you either have or you don't have. Like there's no working out to be done. But what Paul is saying here is he's saying, no, what you believe about Jesus and about God and about reality, those things are going to be harder to figure out every single day than you expect them to be. Your path is going to be filled with moments that will challenge you. Do not assume that you always will have the answers or that it's always gonna be simple or black and white. Expect wrestling, because that's part of the journey. So Again, growing up and like hearing various sermons or listening to a lot of Christian pop culture, I've been listening. I'm gonna just recommend a podcast because I feel like every week I have to do that at least once. But there's a podcast I really like called Good Christian Fun. Thank you, Becky and Andrew, for the recommend on that. And one of the things they do is they sort of evaluate like Christian pop culture from years before, which really sort of like sends me back into my childhood and adolescence. But one of the things that they've sort of noticed, which is totally true, which is one of the things that you find in a lot of like Christian songs from the 90s is like the word doubt is always like the worst thing you can do. And it's always like, you might as well be like out there murdering people if you're like sitting in your church and doubting. And so I was sort of raised with that notion. But the thing is, over and over and over again, from Jacob to Peter to Paul, there is this notion that no, like doubt, like to doubt the things that we just, to doubt our assumptions and to have like this notion that maybe we don't have all the answers. Maybe when you were 13 and went to youth camp, you didn't have all the answers when you came home. Like that's actually okay. That's healthy. You're supposed to wrestle. That's part of it. And so give yourself permission to confront the things that you've always assumed and to ask, okay, do I believe this because this is actually the thing that we see in the scriptures, or do I believe this because of a series of things that I've been told or handed throughout my life? And your path is going to be filled with a lot of moments that you don't have all the answers, and that's okay. So I wanna leave us with a couple of questions. And one of them is a little tangential, but I did want to sort of go back to this a bit. The first question is, when we talk about denying Jesus, what are we really talking about? Because again, if you had gone to youth camp with me, you might have heard that to deny Jesus is to like refuse to wear your camp t-shirt to school, or to like not post on your profile photo a picture of your open Bible next to a cup of coffee. You know what I mean? Like, don't you believe in God at all? Where's your open Bible and cup of coffee? And so where are your memes? So maybe to deny Jesus isn't about like what we like verbally put out there. Maybe when we deny Jesus, when we deny the humanity of others, and when we refuse to show love to our enemies. Maybe we deny Jesus when we don't reflect Jesus in the world. One of the things that Jesus says is, here's how people are gonna know you're with me, is how you love one another. So maybe we deny Jesus by not loving one another, you know? So whenever we deny the humanity of others, whenever we use the image of God to manipulate or to control or to oppress people, maybe that is where we deny Jesus. So that's a tangential question because I didn't want to get away from the story without at least bringing that up. But really primarily what we're talking about here is the wrestling, and we're talking about what does it mean to really struggle, and what does it mean to go through what kind of what Peter's going through here. And so maybe a question is, are there any versions of Jesus that I've been carrying around that need to die? Are there any ideas or presuppositions or assumptions about reality that I've just always sort of taken for granted? And then when you kind of hold them up to the light, you realize like, oh no, that's super flimsy. That didn't come from the Bible at all. It came from a televangelist that I once saw like 13 years ago or something like that. Like it's, Because we don't live in a vacuum. A lot of us are raised with certain ideas and conceptions, and a lot of, not unlike Peter. Peter's idea of Messiah didn't come from Jesus. It came from, speculatively, you could say probably it came from his parents, or it might have come from like the religious circles he ran in when he was a kid. And so it is possible that you've been handed something and it's deeply embedded in you. And one of the things that this is inviting us to is probably the hardest thing that we can possibly do, which is to really look at the things that we believe and ask the question, why do you believe that? And the things that you believe about Jesus, are they really like things that Jesus promoted, or are those just things that were co-opted and like laid on top of the Jesus message so that people could get something else accomplished? Are you with me? So maybe what this story is inviting us to is to kind of peel back all those layers and to really like go into the places that we are most afraid to go, which is our own like set of ideas and presuppositions. That is because no one is better at lying to you than you are. And nothing is harder than like wrestling with the things that we've always assumed are true. And that's where Peter is. And Matthew doesn't resolve the tension. Matthew leaves us there. If all you had was Matthew, this is the last thing you would hear about Peter. Peter is left to struggle and to weep and to confront all the things that he thought were true but aren't, not just about God, but about himself. And so perhaps the invitation here is, if you are wrestling, may you be honest about that. May you go all the way into that. May you not deny the questions that you have. And if you are if you're sitting here and you have, and you know, you like somewhere deep inside you, you know you've got these deeply held ideas, and you know that if you start loosening your grip on those things, the whole thing might start to feel flimsy. May you be brave enough to look at those things anyway. May you find that the Jesus of the scriptures does not have to conform to the images and ideas that you've been given, if the ideas and images that you've been given are hurting people. My goal here as a church is that we could create a space for people to be honest and to feel safe about that struggle and about the journey. My hope is that you can be at this church and just feel like you're not wrestling alone. So we're going to take communion in a second, and if you want to take communion with us, everybody's welcome to. If you don't want to, that's totally okay as well. But as you come, may you find that when you encounter the body broken and the blood poured out, you're encountering a Jesus who is here for self-sacrifice, who is here for love and grace and renewal and redemption. And that maybe all the other versions of Jesus need to die. And may you come to the table at least open to the possibility that there is a better version of Jesus that you've never encountered, because all you've seen are the toxic versions. So may you find renewal. May you find that Jesus is better than you were ever told he was. And may you allow the dark, violent, toxic, harmful versions of Jesus, may you allow those things to die so that something can be resurrected in their place. Let me pray for us. God, we thank you for the gift of the struggle. As painful and as uncomfortable as they are, the moments where we are asking questions may be the moments where we are fully tuned in to what you're trying to tell us. And as those of us who are wrestling and who are asking questions, as we sit here and as we ask those questions and as we struggle and as we doubt, as we are confronted, as Jacob was by the river, may we be honest with ourselves, and may we find that the Jesus that we find in the scriptures is better than the Jesus that we've been shown in a lot of the places in our lives. May we forgive ourselves for all the ways that we have hijacked the idea of who Jesus is and what this is all about. May we forgive others who have done the same. But may we choose to let those versions of you die so that something else can be resurrected in its place. Thank you for grace. Thank you for love. Thank you for peace. Thank you for the self-sacrifice that we celebrate around the communion table. Thank you for inviting us to have our eyes open and to see the beauty of the story that you are actually trying to tell. In the name of Jesus, we pray. Amen.